This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Did you know that VA New England Healthcare provides the very best medical care for our nation's heroes? Did you or a loved one serve this great country? You might be eligible for free healthcare. Find out right now by calling 844-VA-CARES. That's 844-VA-CARES. Or visit the VA website at vacares.us. Look, if you or a loved one served this country, get the health care you earned and deserve.
The following podcast is hashtag Boone approved. It's time for another edition of the Brett Boone Podcast.
Remember when me and you almost went to blows? Lou sent me down three times too, so I know what you're talking about.
With your host, MLB All-Star, Brett Boone.
Bottom line is, you will become a successful major league hitter by hitting pitcher's mistakes.
As he sits down with his sports and entertainment friends from around the world.
You are not going to be a successful major league hitter if you hit pitcher's pitches.
This isn't just any former jocks podcast.
To change the outcome, you got to change the income. You got to change what goes in. Then that changes what goes out.
Often duplicated, but never replicated. Just like his bat flip.
Okay, now the party starts. The responsibility starts now.
Now in its fourth year, this is the one and only Brett Boone Podcast.
Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. I'm Brett Boone. Today on the program, I'm joined by my first big league double play partner. He's an 11-time gold glover. He's a Cleveland Guardian, and oh, it's tough for me to say this, Guardian instead of Indian, but he's a Cleveland Guardian Hall of Famer. Ladies and gentlemen, Omar Vizquel. Omar, thanks for coming on the program.
Hello, Brett. How you doing, man? Long time no see.
Is it still weird saying Guardians over Indians?
Really strange. Every time that we have an interview and, you know, we're referring to those years, it's very weird to call him Guardians. You know, I always got that Indian word in my mouth. And, you know, those were the years, man. Those were the years. And it's hard, but we're getting used to it right now.
Okay, let's get this out of the way. I've been reading a lot of stuff. You've been through a lot lately in your life. And in 2019, you got relieved of your duties by the Chicago White Sox. Where are you right now? And you've been through a lot of tough times. Talk about what you've been through. A lot of people saying that in today's day and age, it's so tough because of the social media, and everybody's got an opinion, and you're hearing things coming from all different angles, not necessarily people that have knowledge of the things going on in your life. I want to give you this platform to tell me what's going on, how you've got through it. It's been tough for you.
Well, I'm doing good, Brett. Thanks for asking. I think this is a trouble that had really kept me out of baseball for a little bit. You know, first of all, it was my ex-wife. We have some kind of argument, and she wanted to go public with it, you know, saying that I was doing something that I wasn't really doing. And, you know, at the end of the day, when they start getting all the information, you know, the judge say, I have nothing here. This case has to be dismissed. There was nothing really to punish me. You know, obviously there was an investigation and everything, but, you know, I did what I had to do with MLB and, I have to cover some hours of charity work and stuff like that. And everything went okay. The next year after that, I got in trouble with, one of the workers that, was in the White Sox organization. I was the manager there in the AA team. And I think this was the case that really got me, you know, confused. At the end of the season, I was managing, obviously, and we had a great game, and we came from behind, and we're having a party. We were celebrating in the dugout, in the clubhouse, and then I made a contact in the shower with one of the guys that was working for us. You know, he was a bad boy, clubby, one of those guys that cleaned the clubhouse and did everything there. And he was with us for the whole time, the whole year. He was part of our team. And, you know, when you get a team, man, it's like a family in there. A lot of things happen in the clubhouse, and we play games on each other and stuff like that. And I think I went a little bit too far with the game, try to be funny, and then everything just kind of turned around. This guy decided to sue me. And then when I was going through that problem, my mom went into cancer, and you know, I was having a really tough time mentally with that. I fell into depression, and while I was dealing with the problem with the lawyers and all that, you know, I didn't know this guy got a special condition, and things got complicated. So, you know, everything that was said on the paper was what really bothered me, because I never was that kind of guy. You know, a lot of bad things were saying in there, and I felt really ashamed of myself. Obviously, I knew that I committed a mistake, that I made a mistake of making that contact. And I wanted to apologize. You know, right now I'm still doing a lot of interviews saying that I want to apologize, that I felt really bad, that I felt like a bully by my act. And I learned a lot, you know, reading about it and everything. But the most important thing is that, like, 1 year later, we settled the case. Everything was already solved. And I was able to, you know, to learn about the process and everything. Like I said, I was very confused. I fell into depression, and I didn't know what to do. But thanks to the help of a lot of people, you know, I start talking a little bit about it. Finally, I can clear my head and talk about the problem. And I feel right now that it's behind me. But obviously, it hurt me in a big way. You know, I couldn't find a job in MLB. I was under investigation. And I think by now, it's been 4 years now, I can say that, you know, I feel better, that I'm able to speak with anyone about this problem. Obviously, there were some things that were said on the final settlement that we can't really give details to the problems. But, you know, it's something that I feel really ashamed of myself and my acts. And, you know, right now I apologize to everybody that wants to talk about this problem with this guy and the organization of the White Sox that gave me the opportunity. So, you know, I feel way better now.
After going through something like you went through, what did you learn? And do you have any advice for a young player or a young up-and-coming coach or anybody in uniform in today's professional baseball atmosphere?
Yeah, you know, times have changed a lot. And, you know, they put some rules and regulations there in the contracts that, you know, I would say the values that you have to have, you know, the respect that you have to have with each other, not only with your teammates, with your family, with, you know, with everything that you do around baseball, because you are an image not only for MLB, you're an image for yourself, you're an image for a lot of kids. And now I am incorporating all these speeches when I go talk to kids in high schools or baseball clinics, all this stuff, because it is important for them to know that one act, you know, 1 second on one little joke can really take you away of the goal of being a major leaguer or to have a long career in this game. And, you know, we're learning from these different things that's happening, not only for me, but other players and other people that has been in the public eye. So, you know, it is important to me now to speak about these issues and speak about these problems that could happen to you and something that have to be talked about. You know, good values, discipline, respect, all these things are very important now for me to speak to these guys.
All right, let's go to a more positive conversation. 1992 is when I met Omar. We were teammates. I got called up in late 92. And 93, I ended up going off to the Reds. Omar ended up obviously going to the Cleveland Guardians, and we kind of started our real careers. But what do you remember about those early days in Seattle? Especially, I want to touch up. I remember you came down to AAA, and I don't know if it was a rehab assignment. I don't know what it was, but you came down to Calgary. That's the first time I really got to talk to you and meet with you. And I remember talking to you about hitting, and, you know, you were known as this up and coming defensive gold glove type, but hitting wasn't your forte. And I remember having a conversation with you about hitting. Well, 2,800 and some hits later, I think you figured it out and the gold glove never went away. But I remember that conversation with you in Calgary. Early Seattle days, what do you remember? What do you remember about Lou? And then I'm going to ask you about an incident that happened in Detroit when I hit Lou in the head with a ball, and you were the shortstop, I think, that day.
Well, those were the school days, man. Those were the days that everything that you hear from people, you kind of put it in your hard drive and you start getting all this information. For me, obviously, the hitting was the toughest part because I was starting to learn to be a switch hitter. You know, I was having a lot of problems on my hitting, and that's because I only have 2 or 3 years switch hitting, and it's not easy to learn in the big leagues to hit both sides of the plate. So I needed to hear everything about everyone. I speak obviously to Alvin Davis, who was one of the master of hitting there when I was in Seattle. I speak a lot with Harold Reynolds because he was another switch hitter infielder that helped me out a lot. And, you know, I try to take as many batting practices as possible to kind of get the hold of it. I got a lot of help from a lot of people. And it was important to me to kind of listen to the approach and the way that you guys take the at-bats. You were the type of guy that swing really hard. I couldn't really swing the way that you swung. And to me, the contact and go the opposite way and learning the way like that, it was a good beginning for me. And I remember that the defense was my strength. You know, when I take the field, I took pride to turn all those double plays. When I got a partner like you, it made things easier because you weren't one of those guys that, you know, just feel the goal and throw it. I didn't think too much about it. I had some other double play partners where they're like really mechanical and stuff like that, and you were really fluid at that, so he helped out a lot when we started the combination there around the 92 season.
You know, I think about that, and all that we both had several different double play partners in our careers. You're right though, when you talk about how important is it. The longest tenure I had, obviously you had Robbie Alomar for a long time. I had Barry Larkin in Cincinnati for quite a while. And you're right. You develop a rapport with one another where you really trust your partner. So you can kind of freewheel, play your game, make great plays, and not worry that your partner's not going to be there. It's a trust factor that I understand what you're saying when you have a few partners throughout your career where it's just not there. And you don't have that freedom to just kind of go into the hole, turn up, spin, throw, and trust that your partner is going to be there. All of a sudden, you're thinking, I've got to be perfect with my throw or he won't handle it. And you end up taken away from the greatness of the defense that you have. I found that in my career. There was a few guys throughout my career where I went, wow, if I pick up that ball in the hole, make a spinning double play feed, if it's not right there, it's going to go by them because they're coming across the bag too hard, yeah. Whatever it may be. I'm talking from the second base side, obviously. You were on the shortstop side. But you're right. I mean, it is essential, especially at the big league level, to have that partner that you really work with. It's the closest thing I can think of, like a pitcher and a catcher's relationship. Like when they're going to – when that pitcher goes to the mound and he trusts that catcher – man, he's in a great mental frame going into that outing. And I think it's nothing but beneficial. The middle infield is not far off from that. You got a great partner, you can be great, I think, defensively.
Yeah, no doubt, man, no doubt. There is nothing better that, you know, when you're going forward to get a ground ball, you're going towards a hole, you're going to the left or to your right, you kind of read the feet of the guy, what is he going to give you? And you already have that feeling of, okay, he's going to give me the ball right here because he knows that if you give me the ball somewhere else, I'm not going to turn that double play. And, you know, there are some guys that they just want the ball around the base that you don't have to think too much about it. And things come naturally. And it's a connection, like you say, it's a connection. It's something that instincts take over. And things work in a great way. You know, it happened to me to few guys where I was really confused. I was giving the feet they wanted, and they were, like, late to the base, or they couldn't make a good throw to first base. You know, it happened. And as long as you communicate with the guy and try to ask him, how do you feel more comfortable to kind of feel that relaxation around second baseman, you're not going to be able to have a great combination.
Yeah. I agree with you. Talk a little bit about Lou, what you remember. All right, I'll tell the audience listening to the podcast today. It's 1992. It's 1993. And I was on the shuttle. We call it the shuttle, where I was going up, down. And Lou and myself, we were at that time in my career, man, we were butting heads. And Omar, it ended up my second time around in Seattle. To this day, Lou's one of my all-time favorites. We became really close as time went on, and you know, I became a veteran. Things were a lot different than when I was a rookie. But when I was a rookie, me and Lou, it seemed like every day we were fighting in his locker room.
Yeah, Lou is really tough on rookies on young guys.
Oh boy,
he's extremely tough. Extremely tough. You know, I remember one thing with you. That is kind of funny that I remember like it was yesterday, man. We got men on second base, nobody out. And at that time, you have like, you know, 25 home runs or something like that. And he told the third base coach to kind of like make him hit the ball the other way so he can, you know, you can do the job. Right. And you got a fastball inside and you turn on it and hit a bullet to the third baseman, line drive, that he catch it. And you couldn't really move the guy over to second base. Immediately, you were running back to the dugout, and he pointed to, I don't know who was the backup second baseman there, and say, you got a second. Brett, yeah. Out of the game. They took you right out of the game right away. It was kind of funny because I never seen a guy taking somebody out so quick, man. Stories that we have with Lou. Lou was an amazing manager. We learned so much with him.
Oh, he was awesome. And I was going to tell that we're in Detroit, and I don't know if you remember this, but we're in that old Detroit stadium, tiny little dugout.
Yeah.
And I had finished the inning as a hitter. And back in those days, you remember, man, I was mad if I didn't get a hit every at bat. And I just missed a 3-1 fastball, and I popped it straight up to right center field. And I remember I was so mad because I missed a good pitch to hit. And in between innings, Dave Magadan was our first baseman. You were playing short. And you kind of, when you get mad because your previous at bat, and you just kind of fire it to first in between when he's throwing ground balls, fire this ball to Dave Magadan and I fire it high? He doesn't jump. He just lets it go. And it was like it was in slow motion. One hop hit Lou right in the side of the head in Detroit. And I remember you said to me, I don't know where you remember or not. You said to me, oh, Booney, you hit the skipper. and I said something like, screw him, he deserves it. At the same time, I felt so bad. And I go in there, Lou's got this big welt on his head. He's looking around. He's asking you guys, he's like, who hit me with that ball? And you guys were protecting me at that time. You're like, nobody said anything. And at the end of the game, we went into that little tiny locker room. And I was just feeling the guilt, you know. So I finally, you know, I got the gumption up and I walked into his office and I sat down. He said, yeah, Booney, what do you need? You know, in that Lou way. And I said, Skip, I just want to tell you that ball that hit you. I said, I threw it. And he looked at me and he said, geez, right in the effing head. Blah, blah, blah. He goes, son, he goes, I know you didn't mean to hit me. It was an accident, but did you have to hit me right in the head? We all think it's funny.
Yeah.
The next day I come to the ballpark, I got sent down to the minor leagues again. And I remember, you know, stories like that. It was when Omar Vizquel comes to mind for me, I remember, and you're going to remember this, 2001. Seattle Mariners against Cleveland. It's still on MLB Classics to this day. When we had like a 12-2 lead,
yes.
And that was the year where we had about a 15-game lead in the division, so it really didn't impact us as the season.
Uh-huh. But
that particular game, I had the day off. I'm sitting with Jay Buhner. Lou Piniella says to me, "Booney, no matter what," I had played like 50 in a row. He goes, "No matter what, you're not playing today." I said, "Okay." And I'm sitting there, and it's getting to the fifth inning. It's 12-2. I got my turfs on. All of a sudden, Cleveland, you guys start a little comeback.
Yeah,
it's 12-5. I'm not thinking about anything. It's 12-7. And I'll never forget this. Jay, who was a teammate of both of ours, Buhner was one of my mentors when I first came to the big leagues. He looks at me and he goes, "You came to the plate, and I think you hit the double down a right field line."
Triple.
He goes, "Triple." He goes, "You know, Booney, right now, if Omar hits a double," he said, "it's going to be a tie game, and Lou's going to make you pinch hit next inning." And I looked at him and I said, "No way." He promised me I wasn't playing. And just as I said that, you hit that ball down the line, and the base is clear and it's tied. And I'm looking at Jay and I said, "You got to be kidding me." Sure enough, one inning later, I'm hiding like this.
Yeah,
I'm hiding behind Jay. And here comes Lou walking down the dugout, visiting dugout in Cleveland. And he sees me and he looks at me and he says, "Son, I'm sorry, but you have to hit." And I remember John Rocker was closing. I had played with him the year previous in Atlanta. And I said, "Rocker's not going to give me a heater to hit in this situation." Well, he started me off with a fastball way for a strike. I'm sitting on his breaking ball. He throws me a second pitch fastball inside, strike two. Then we waste. I think the count goes 2-2. He ends up punching me out. And I mean, talk about never ready, but I'll never forget. I said, that game, I had to go in and hit and strike out. Because Omar hit that, and I was thinking it was a double. You said triple, but Jay had called it.
It was a triple with the bases loaded of Sasaki. Yep. And I remember that you guys got one of the strongest bullpen at the time. You got Archie Rhodes, you got Suzuki, I don't remember his name, but
it was a hero. Yeah,
Jeff Nelson too, right?
Arthur Rhodes.
Yeah. So it was one of the greatest game. It's still like one of those ESPN classic, one of the biggest comeback in the history of the game. 12 runs deficit. It was a crazy game, but I remember that game so much because my son Nico was the first day as a bad boy, and I brought it down. Giving his little uniform. He was only 5 years old. You know, at that time they allowed your sons to be in the dugout and stuff like that. And then, when you guys start scoring all those runs, it's like, man, Nico's not going to have a good day as the first day as a bad boy.
Right. They're never going to let him back in there.
No, they're never going to let him back. And then all of a sudden, man, we start like scoring runs, home runs. And Gene Tome hit a home run. And Will Cordero and Jobber Cabrera, Robbie Aloma. I remember that they took Juan Gonzalez out of the game. They took Robbie Alomar out of the game. Those were the two of the best players that we had. And then everything started going the different direction. It was one of the greatest games ever for us.
Did you know that VA New England Healthcare provides the very best medical care for our nation's heroes? Did you or a loved one serve this great country? You might be eligible for free healthcare. Find out right now by calling 844-VA-CARES. That's 844-VA-CARES. Or visit the VA website at vacares.us. Look, if you or a loved one served this country, get the health care you earned and deserve.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know, I was watching an interview with you, I think it was a year ago or something. You were talking about the different way you grew up playing baseball. So my question to you is, what's the difference? I grew up in Southern California. I played Little League. Then I went to Connie Mack Baseball, high school, college ball. That's a brand of a baseball. What is the difference? The different style of baseball you grew up playing versus the style of baseball I ended up playing. I grew up playing.
Well, Brett, you know what? I think the style might be similar. It's just the way that we play the game here that make it so complicated. You know, the baseball park here, the fields have a lot of rocks, and you know, they weren't as nice as the ballparks in the United States. I remember when I first came to America, and they took us to this ballpark in Butte, Montana, where my first year. You know, these fields were amazing. They were so taken care of. You know, they put that the dirt that you like, and the grass was cut perfectly. We didn't have that here in Venezuela. In Venezuela, the fields are terrible. You know, sometimes you see goats and cows walking by, and you leave these big holes in everywhere. So it was different conditions. And when we get to America, I think that's one of the things that we like the most, you know, the ballpark and the bounce that you get from the ground balls were completely what you were expected. You know, here sometimes, man, the ball bounces all over the place. They hit you in your face. They hit you in your chest. And, you know, as a kid, sometimes you start getting afraid to continue to play the game because you were getting hurt. And I have a lot of friends in high school that they say, man, this game is not for me. I need to play something with a bigger ball, basketball or soccer or something, because there were so many injuries, you know, that was happening those days. I think nowadays is better. The baseball fields are in better conditions now. But, you know, I think the competition always has been everybody wanted to be a shortstop in those days. Mm-hmm. You know, as you know, every Latin player that gets to America, they were shortstop that are turned into different positions. You know, we got catchers now turning shortstop turning into catcher, shortstop turning into second baseman or outfielders. Everybody wanted to play shortstop, but you know, lately there is a lot of competition on other positions. So now we have a lot of pitchers and first baseman with power, all that. Before, we couldn't see that very much, but baseball here has grown so much. Matter of fact, in the off season, we call them off season, or summer league here. There is a new league now that is going on that I've been a part of, and we go to every team to kind of look for better solutions on how to get the league stronger and better. And I give the opportunity to some of these players that don't have contracts now for America or for Mexico, or for Korea or Japan, to play here in Venezuela. So, you know, it has been a successful thing here. And we're still working on that, and let the players know that whatever they need, we're going to make it better. So it gives these guys an opportunity to continue playing the game and be good for the league that is going on right now, for the Winter Ball League.
I wanted to ask you this, and this is what I'm noticing. When we played, I was very critical of people that played second base from a defensive standpoint. You know,
yeah.
I was very critical when I watched, and I only had a handful of guys that I thought were really elite second basemen, and probably three or four in all of baseball.
Who did you like those days? I'm curious to know. Who do you like?
I think as a young second baseman, I always looked to your partner as Robbie. Robbie was kind of the gold standard for, you know, he was about 4 or 5 years ahead of me getting to the big leagues. And Robbie was established at that time. And I remember getting to the American League and I'm like, I'm going to take your gold glove away from you. And I finally did, but it took me a while. But he was kind of the guy I looked to that was the guy, you know, winning the gold gloves and playing really good defense. Robbie, all around, one of the greatest second basemen of all time. I mean, he could hit first, second, third. It didn't matter. And what do you need me to do? You need me to hit 25 home runs? All right, and drive in 100? All right, I'll hit third. You need me to be that two guy? You need me to lead off? He could do it all, and he was always a plus defender. So I look to Robbie, but I look around the game today, and I wonder if you do the same. From a skill standpoint, defensively, I see the players are getting better and better skill-wise on their defense, the way they cover balls, the way they I think the level of play. I fight with this because it's like I don't think the baseball players are necessarily better, but I think the physical is getting better. So I see a lot of second basemen and not even name guys. That, man, they can really pick it, and they can make plays that back in our day only the elite made. I don't know if you're watching the same thing. Do you see the same thing as that?
Yeah, you know, I think the difference now, I hate when guys have these reports in their pocket and they're kind of picking up the report and they pull it out.
Where to stand.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to play now 2 steps to my left or 2 steps to my right because the paper said so. I mean, you have to have a notion, or you have to follow the game, the pitcher, who's pitching, and who's hitter, who's hitting, and then move along with what you see. You know, I don't see why you have to have a piece of paper in your pocket to let you know. It's more robotic, you know. I would say it's more robotic now. The instincts are kind of gone a little bit. You see everybody, you see a left-hander hitter, everybody's just playing right behind the mound, no matter who it is. You know, stuff like this, I think we have to go back to what you know about the game, the score, the situations, all the stuff. And we learn about numbers every day, and we learn about situational hitting and all that. And I believe now that major league players, they fall into this pattern too. They don't adjust with the game. Everything is just pull, 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 pull. And that's why everybody's playing that way. But I believe that we still have some players out there that are unbelievable, have some amazing tools. You see young in their career, but they kind of deteriorate quicker. You know, they play 8 or 10 years and that's it. I don't want to play anymore. And in the past, I think that you see that durability of players that want to play longer, they want to stay on the field longer. And I think that's the only difference that I see nowadays.
When you talk about defense, you know, and you hear this all the time, he's got great hands. I always tell people this. I said, listen, everybody at the big league level has great hands. The great defenders are the people that have great feet, great footwork, people that put themselves into position to get a good hop consistently. Because if you hit a big leaguer 10 ground balls and they get a great hop, they're probably going to be 10 for 10. But the great ones create the good hop. So I always talk about feet being a big part of it. Now, you are the exception. You're one of the great shortstops all time defensively. And you had a way about you. You had a flair. You had you were different. You knew it. We knew you were good. You knew you were good. And Omar, by the way, we're talking about shortstop combinations. I had some shortstops through my travels and through my journey that tried to play like Omar Vizquel, and they'd make mistakes and they'd say, well, he does it. I said, well, he's Omar and he doesn't screw it up. I said, if you can do whatever you want, if you never make a mistake, but you're not allowed to come across the middle and barehand it because you're going to screw it up a third of the time. And that's way too much. So you cause some problems for some shortstops out there. They always try to be like you. I said, listen, if you're great and you never mess up, you could do anything you want. I remember I played with Andrew Jones and he used to do that basket, kind of that little bit of a hot dog play in center field. I said, because he's Andrew Jones and he can do that. That doesn't mean you're allowed to do it. That means Andrew's allowed to do it. So I think a lot of that comes into
Everybody,
your thoughts on defense, though.
Adjust to the way that you feel comfortable. You know, you cannot play like Bobby Witt Jr. or like Lindor. You cannot. You got your own abilities, and you have to play the way that you feel comfortable. I remember that I loved David Concepcion when I grew up. He was the only shortstop, Venezuelan shortstop at the time, and I used to follow and love the way that he played. But there is no way that I can make the plays that he made. You know, he was a long, tall shortstop. I was a shorter than him, and there is no way I couldn't make those plays. But to me, every time that I talk about defense, I believe a lot in rhythm. If you don't have rhythm at the time that you fielding ground balls and the way that you attack the balls, you're not going to have the same fluent way to field ground balls. A lot of people told me, the ball never take a bad hop on you. It's no, because if you read a ground ball and you have that rhythm, either go forward or backwards, you don't have to attack the ball all the time. There are ways where you have to back up a little bit to get a longer hop. And that's the way that I like to feel ground balls. You know, my feet were one in front of the other. Doesn't necessarily have to be my left foot in front, like always. A lot of guys try to feel that way. I mean, sometimes my left foot was backwards, was behind the other. Right. And that's the way that I move. And if you don't have that rhythm, you're not going to be able to make all those plays.
Yeah, and that's what I tell people. I said the great players create great hops. That's why they're great. When you're getting good hops all the time, it's not that tough of a play. If you're consistently getting bad hops, even the guys with the greatest hands will still make mistakes over time. You know, when talking about young players, and with I'm sure a ton of young players come to Omar Vizquel, especially shortstops, and want to know, hey, do you ever stop and think, well, okay, because you did it a certain way. Mm-hmm. You think, okay, I can't teach them to do it the way I did it. Because, you know, I think about that all the time with young second basemen. Yeah. I can't necessarily, because some of the ways I turn to double play, the guy I'm working with can't do it that way. Maybe I can't do it their way. So do you ever have trouble? Do you just keep it really basic when you're talking defense in the middle infield with players? Because they can't be Omar Vizquel, and maybe you couldn't do it their way of doing it.
No, I don't get into trouble trying to teach him the right fundamentals. I try to work to what they have, obviously. And you try to make it a little easier for them, but making them understand that you cannot never feel flat-footed. You have to have some kind of movement when you go after a ball. If you wait for the ball, that's when the ball starts playing tricks on you. You have to have some kind of movement, either forward or backwards. The position of the feet, you know, they don't have to change. It's just how the angle that you take to the ball. You make it understand all these little fundamentals of the game, that when you get to a certain age, everything just falls into place. You don't have to think about it anymore. That's what is so important, to start with the young and be consistent when you practice. Do the practice the right way. You don't want to practice flipping balls behind your back and feeling balls, you know, behind in between your legs. You don't do that during the game. When you practice the right way, you take that into the game, and everything that you do in practice, that's what the way that you're going to play. So when I talk to them, that's what I try to teach them. Those right fundamentals. And when you have that, man, you have a great advantage of repeating that every day, every game, that when you get into the field, you just act normally and just have fun.
Are you pretty amazed on how the shortstop position especially has evolved? I mean, you talk about you and your height, size. That was normal for a shortstop. My height, size, you know, 5'10 on a good day, that was a normal second baseman. That was the size we were in. The Cal Ripkins of the world, that he was considered kind of a freak. And when I say freak, I mean it in a very
respectful, positive way. It was weird, yeah. It was,
but he was 6'3", you know.
Yeah, a guy so tall. I mean, you don't see that very often. And right now, it is strange because the scouting, when you go scout infielders now, they want sign guys that are tall.
And, yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, you see a lot of guys that I've been in a couple tryouts, and you know, I say, wow, this guy got some great hands. And what I hear from the scout is like, he's too short. He's not going to give us what we need. You know, we need some kind of power, getting some power from the shortstop position. And I say, wow, man, you lose and win games with defense, and you got a great defensive guy in there. And a guy that maybe can hit 270, you know, is great. And that's the way the game has been going into weird direction, you know, with the way that they sign in players nowadays. And, they're asking guys to be tall. And you see guys that throw like 100 miles from the shortstop position. Yeah. Now you have to have a strong arm to fill the position. I don't think I ever make a throw over 90 miles an hour. You know, I didn't have that kind of arm, and all the plays that I made were like right there. You know, I consistently throw the ball in the target. Yeah. And it's weird to see guys like me now playing the game, and, you know, it's being tough for them.
Well, it started with kind of Alex with A-Rod coming on, and he was big. He was 6'3". Jeter was taller than people think, 6'3", 6'4". But now you've dwarfed, you've gone into did you ever think we'd be sitting here talking about a 6'7" shortstop, L.A. De La Cruz in Cincinnati? That was like, it would never happen, especially at the shortstop position. Yeah, maybe at first base, maybe in, you know, a Frank Howard or a Richie Sexson, first baseman or outfielder, but never a shortstop. All of a sudden, you got a 6'7" shortstop. So to me, it's like, it is a little bit weird the size of these kids coming up now.
Yeah, I mean, the scouting, man, I think that's what the teams are asking for right now. Tall guys that can move, that, you know, they're faster and stronger. And I think that's the target that they're going for right now.
Watching the game nowadays, the lineups have changed. Back in our day, you were always the big guys driving in the runs, hit third and fourth. The Kenny Lofton types of the world that were going to get on and steal bases, hit first, the Omar Vizquels, and you became one of the great two-hole hitters of our generation. Because you
I couldn't do that now, man. I couldn't hit second these days.
No. Second now is for Juan Soto, is for Aaron Judge, is Otani's leading off. So the game has changed. What do you think's missing? Because you were that guy on the Cleveland Indians when we come play, when I was with the Mariners, and you had great teams. 95, you were there. You had the Albert Bells. You talked about Juan Gonzalez. But I'll tell you, in a situation, you know, runner on third, less than two outs, you got to move a runner over. Omar Vizquel was the biggest pain in the neck in the world because you were going to give him a good at bat every time. And a lot of times, the last guy we wanted up there was Omar in that type of situation. That kind of historical two hole. Do you think the game's missing anything now? Because we don't have those two hole hitters. We don't have that leadoff hitter that gets on and steals second. We've got that leadoff hitter's looking to hit a home run. Brian Downing was the guy in the 80s that was kind of the non-normal for the Angels. He led off and he hit home runs, but he was the exception. Nobody else did that. Now it's becoming commonplace.
Yeah, I think what we're missing, Brett, is more contact. You know, we're striking out so much. We're seeing games where guys are striking out. You see when there is men on third and less than two outs and they don't even try to hit a ground ball to the middle. You know, we're missing that little game a little bit. I know there are some teams that have no option and they have to play that little game. I see the game from the Cleveland Guardians and they have to play that game because they don't have that kind of power. And they make it to the playoff, you know, that they were so close to beat the Yankees and go to the World Series. I mean, teams like the Arizona Diamondbacks last year that were in the World Series, there are teams still adopting that way of playing. And even the big teams, I mean, I saw the Dodgers playing the first and third push bunt to first to try to get a guy in. So, you know, every once in a while you see it, but not as consistently as we see it on years before. And obviously the second hitter have disappeared from that kind of theory that you have to bunt and hit and run. And now the second hitter, like you said, get 30 and plus home runs. So, you know, it just have to do with a lot with the way that the guys are swinging the bat. Everything is for defenses, and sometimes we forget about the little things, and maybe that's hurting some guys and some teams to go farther to what they have to go.
Before I let you go, I just want to touch a little bit on that Cleveland run you had. You went to the World Series in 95, 97. You went to the postseason 95, 96, 97, 98, 99, 2001, where I was happy to beat you guys in 2001 in Seattle, but then we got whooped by the Yankees. people talk all the time about in the National League, the Atlanta Braves of the 90s. When I was in Cincinnati, it was a nightmare going to Atlanta. They were so good up and down that lineup. That pitching staff is one of the greatest, I think, all time. But that Cleveland Indians run you guys had in the 90s in the American League was kind of the mirror image of the Atlanta Braves in the National League. You went to two World Series. You never won. I tell people all the time, I said, you know, we just watched the Dodgers win the World Series. And I sit there now as an ex-player and go, I hope these guys appreciate what they're celebrating right now, because I've seen so many players, guys I've played with and against, Hall of Fame players, never got a chance to win one. I got to go to a World Series. I lost in the World Series. You lost in two. But it puts in, and you played a long time, 20 plus years, puts in perspective how hard it is to actually win a World Series. And why do you think you never did in Cleveland?
Well, yeah, we had a great run there. Everything was amazing. The opening of the Jake at the time, they called him Jacobs Field at the time in 94, brought a lot of enthusiasm. They put some money in. They brought some great players in, Otto Hershiser, Dennis Martinez, Dave Winfield, Tony Fernandez. I mean, they have the money to spend to make things work in Cleveland. You know, we were part of those World Series team, and we couldn't just win it. You know, the Atlanta Braves have one of the best pitching, like you said. And then against the Marlins, we play a seven-game series, and we end up losing on the seven games. So, you know, it was too bad. Sometimes you never know when the time for your team is to come. There were some teams that stayed on the way that didn't make it, they thought they couldn't make it to the World Series. Sometimes the best team don't make it. It's just the way that you play the game. And it teaches a lot about the way that we learn something different in these playoff games. How the Detroit Tigers, a team that nobody can count on, advance. Yeah. And, you know, with the young guys that they have, this is a typical example of how teams get a good break. They believe on something, they believe on the cause, and they go at it and they play their ass off and end up getting to the World Series. But, you know, obviously the money will help a little bit. If you have a team that you can spend some money on players, that's going to help the process. But, you know, we have some great teams, man. We just didn't get the break to do it on the 90s. And I was so happy, though, that I got to play and learn so much from the guys that were on those teams. A lot of Hall of Famers there, a lot of players with they were hunger to play the game. They were hunger to beat guys up. And it was great. One of the best time in my career when I was there. And I continue to follow the Guardians. You know, I love that team. Their pitching, their bullpen was amazing this year. The way they play the game defensively was awesome. By the way, congratulations to Andrés Giménez, who won another Gold Glove at second base.
Yeah.
And Brian Rocchio, their shortstop, also from Venezuela, had a great year. He was nominated to get there too, and he couldn't do it. But this is a guy that has some great defensive skills too. We're going to see one of the best combinations in the game there with those two guys. And I'm glad, man. I'm glad that the Guardians is still hanging in there. You know, the fact that they don't have too much money to spend, but they're still on the top is great. And I felt really proud that I was part of those Cleveland Indians at the time in the 90s. And we have those great years there. So, amazing.
Got it. Well, Omar, I appreciate you coming on. I'm really happy to see you're getting past the troubles we talked about at the at the opening. One of the best to ever do it, ladies and gentlemen. Omar was pretty special player. And like I said, 2,877 hits. So do you ever think that when we were talking in Calgary in 1992, do you ever think you have that many hits?
Never, man. I mean, there were so many things when you turn back and look at your career. I played 24 years in the big league. I retired when I was 45 years old. And I look at the, highlights of players and when they retire at 40 and they look great. And I can't believe that I played five more years than most of those guys. And, 2,800 hits and everything that you've done in your career, it was really good. But you know what, Brett? We learned from the mistakes that we made. I'm glad that I got to speak a little bit about what happened to me. This can be an example to a lot of players. I continue to do this with the kids and everywhere I go to preach the game of baseball and the values, of the game. During this week, I have a couple of other baseball clinics that I have to go to. And if I can help one or two guys to think about this and make a difference, it's great. I want to work in MLB again. A lot of doors were closed to me. And I think it's time that I come back to the game because I love this game. This is all that I dream of, play the game of baseball. We made difference of speaking with young people about this, and I want to come back, and this will help to open a lot of doors. I want to apologize to what people read because it wasn't true. That wasn't the Omar Vizquel that Brad. I mean, you played with me, and I played with a lot of people. Otherwise, I wouldn't have that career of 24 years. I would have been that kind of guy, and I know the kind of Omar that I am. The guy that gave himself to the field, to baseball for all this year. And I know that, the things that were written about me were false. And that's what really hurt me. But I'm glad that we're speaking, with a lot of guys about this. And thank you for the opportunity.
You got it. Thank you, Omar. I appreciate it. For those of you that want to watch this podcast, you can now watch it on my own YouTube channel. Check that out. For those of you listening to the Boone Podcast, download your podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. And until next time, keep it here.
Did you know that VA New England Healthcare provides the very best medical care for our nation's heroes? Did you or a loved one serve this great country? You might be eligible for free healthcare. Find out right now by calling 844-VA-CARES. That's 844-VA-CARES. Or visit the VA website at vacares.us. Look, if you or a loved one served this country, get the health care you earned and deserve.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800.
See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.